Hi, welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. This month, podcasting from PodCamp Atlanta, I'm Joseph G. of Monotonous.net and Doraville.org. We're here to talk about Georgia politics, and we will start off introducing ourselves with the panelists to the left of me.
Hi, I'm Garrett Vonk. I have a personal blog at GarrettVonk.com.
Randy Lewis, GeorgiaDailyDigest.com.
Catherine Smith, blog for Democracy and Georgia for Democracy.
Shelby Highsmith, the Young Democrats of Atlanta and Shelbinator.com.
Grift Drift from Drifting Through the Grift.
Well, thank you all for coming. We're still in the middle of Georgia legislative season, so they haven't gone home yet. I don't know, it's kind of seemed to me like not much has happened this session, but the same things just keep getting talked about and talked about and talked about. Probably the one that's been a crisis for the longest time during this legislature, and they even took off 2 weeks to avoid dealing with it, is the peach care situation where the federal government's going to stop funding it. I just kind of want to get your takes on the solution that's been come up with in terms of pulling money from Medicare to pay for peach care.
Well, I mean, it appears to be it's primarily just a game being played between Washington and Georgia right now and several other, I think, 17 states. As to how fast the federal government can process their funds and move them out of state, or if they're going to do it, the states obviously would like for the federal government would obviously like for the state to assume more responsibility for funding that. I think we're really in a position here if we're just watching bureaucrats play games back and forth with each other. But when crunch comes, the program will be funded and everything will be taken care of.
But they all want to make sure that they say, you know, like Purdue, when talking about taking these funds from Medicaid to pay for it, said, I want to make sure everyone knows this is a loan basically from us to the federal government to pay for our state's program that we kind of screwed up on. So
it's a bunch of too wealthy people trying to position who gets credit and who gets blame.
Does this cause problems for Medicare and taking all this money out of there?
Medicare's problems are so great, I don't know that you would even be able to figure that out. It's just another funding crisis for next year.
It could cause temporary problems. I mean, there could be some people denied some forms of benefit, at least temporarily. But it's at this point, it's who are you going to make pay? You know, the kids or the poor people? And right now they're choosing the poor people. And eventually they'll fix that. And like Randy said, it's all just the monetary shell game at this point, a political shell game.
Well, and it also it's the amount of money is in the scheme of state budgetary issues is a relatively small number. It's $125, $130 million. That's a lot of money, but it's not an insurmountable problem for a state the size of Georgia, and certainly with its economic engine.
Well, the question I want to ask is, what happened to the billion-dollar surplus that Purdue talked about during the campaign? Where did all that go?
That's what I want to know, too.
That's a question that no one seems to be asking, including the press at this point. I mean, I guess memories are short, but mine isn't. And I remember those ads that said, well, we got $1 billion, and everybody's like, oh, party time. And then all of a sudden, 3 months later, we got to, like, cut off health care to kids.
Party a little too hard.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's my money. Not their money.
Right.
Well, other issues that are going on in the legislature right now. There's been a lot of discussion about an apology for slavery on behalf of the state of Georgia. A lot of people have been a little bit apprehensive about what that means, whether that means that Georgia would be on the hook for reparations if, you know, movement for that ever took off. Your takes on this, Randy, you were saying earlier that this sounds like it's a done deal.
Apparently there was a deal worked out yesterday. Senator Eric Johnson has really sort of taken the mantle of leadership on this and has worked with the Black Caucus on the legislature, and they've worked out some wording that will allow it to pass. His statements this morning in several newspapers made it very clear he's confident that this will now pass. I think the Republicans would like to move it off the table and not give it to the Democrats as an issue, so it's probably going to happen now. But what's really a standout is Senator Johnson appears to be leading this session to conclusion on a number of issues. The House really has not had any player step up on a number of issues. And I think we're going to see Senator Johnson be in the driver's seat for closing this session out in almost every issue, and this is clearly an example of that.
Is that because some of the problems that the Speaker had early on?
That's part of it, but it's really the House does not have many people who are willing to step up and take a leadership position on some key issues, and the Senate does.
I think on the Senate side, there's almost a strong sense of organization. I mean, you've got Cagle at the top, you've got Johnson driving the issues, and Cagle sort of acting as the governor, not governor like Sonny Perdue, but governors and you know, filtering things or stopping things that may harm the party, and Johnson's out there leading forefront on the hot issues. And that House Republicans, they don't have that sort of sense of teamwork right now. And Eric Johnson has really stepped up this session, and I've got some real problems with some of the things he's done, and there's still some hard questions that I would like to ask him, and he's been avoiding me. But got to hand it to him. He is really playing his political cards.
I don't think we can talk about apology for slavery without also talking about the
Confederate History and Heritage Month. Yeah, it's going to be April, I think.
Yeah, month of April.
Well, once they apologize, you see, then, you know, it's clean slate.
Then they can...
But that's my issue with an apology in the first place, is what does it really do? And I don't think it... There aren't a lot of people whose lives are going to be profoundly affected or impacted by someone apologizing for slavery. But at the same time, it doesn't really hurt me. And if there are people that it actually will help, fine. I mean, you know, they're not going to get a lot of people that aren't going to condemn slavery.
And the state has apologized for things in the past. The eugenics movement and things like that. So go ahead and do it. I'm sort of ambivalent on it as well, but, you know, if the end result is good, you know, let's rip the Band-Aid off.
Well, and if you're to listen to Emily Dickerson from Salon.com, maybe apologizing will help us, white people. So,
okay.
Do you think they're there?
Well, she said we're the ones that can't get over it.
Well, I take apologies very seriously. I don't take them lightly at all in my life or as public institutions offering them. And when somebody asks for an apology, that actually places as much of a burden on the person who is going to offer the apology as the person who's going to receive it. Clearly, that's not the case here. What we're really going to see is a political apology and a political acceptance.
And that's good. And then we can all move on, maybe.
Do you think this is going to open the door for reparations?
I don't think so, because it's not like it's a binding resolution or anything. I mean, I don't see any sort of legal standing that there would be for reparations, and that's certainly something that just ain't going to happen.
Yeah, it's one thing to apologize for something. I don't think it's that you could stand in court and say, well, they apologized for it, now they're going to pay.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably the only thing I've heard against it. So, I mean, just a thought. But I'm a little bit... I think it is interesting that this is happening at the same time they're debating the Confederate History and Heritage Month.
It's always Georgia. That's my thing. Like, you know, every time something like ridiculous comes out, it's like my friends from Michigan call me like, Confederate Heritage and History Month? What, yep. You know, what's going on down there?
Well, I was amazed when I moved down here and, you know, there's a Confederate Independence Day or
Memorial Day
that everyone gets off from the state
government. Well, let me tell you something about that. I have a friend who works at the Capitol, and she tells me this. I don't know. I've never confirmed it. She's African American, and they do not get Martin Luther King Day off.
All right. Now, see, I used to work for the state, and somebody told me this last night. It may have been Randy, and that's not the way I remember.
Okay. Well, then maybe she was just...
Yeah, but it could have changed. I worked for the state over 7 years ago, but the deal used to be that the deal is it's a state law that a state employee has to work while the legislature's in session. You can't take holidays. And for that reason, state employees don't get President's Day, for example. But the legislature used to call a special recess on King Day so that day could be taken off. And then all the ones, the other ones, another one is Lee's birthday, by the way. Lee's birthday and President's Day were moved to Thanksgiving and Christmas so that you got a long weekend on those 2 days, and everybody was happy. And the Confederate Memorial Day, I don't know if that's true or not, but the fact of the matter is that other than this year, when we've got this crazy, let's take a 3-week recess in the middle, legislature's out of session by the time Confederate Memorial Day comes along, so they would be out of work anyway.
That's good, because I've got my plans set up for a Confederate Memorial.
And just so you know, there's one more recess coming in April for 1 week.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
What's that going to be for? Anything in particular?
Spring.
Oh.
It reminds me of something. There's a black comedian one time, and he was talking. This was back when Arizona was like the last state to approve MLK Day. He's like, "What are these people thinking? They want to work. I'm a black dude, and if they had like KKK Day, you think I'm going to go into work?"
Some other things have just kind of dragged on and on in the legislature, and it was on again, off again, on again, off again. Is the alcohol sales on Sunday, which apparently is on again. I'm not entirely sure where this stands. I don't know if any of you guys have been following this more closely.
I actually appeared on Georgia This Week on public television about a month ago. This issue came up. I'll stand by the statement I made then, which was this will pass, the governor will sign it, and it will be part of a 3 or 4 bill trade deal that none of us will ever know anything about. But it will pass.
You think it's going to get through the House?
It will get through the House.
Because, I mean, it's going to come out of the Senate. What I've heard is that the House is going to be a stumbling block.
The House is too weak to say no.
And what about signing?
I think the governor will sign it. He gave himself an out, saying that, you know, it's up to local communities to decide, and he will give himself an out on
it. They'll put it on the ballot in November or whatever.
Won't it have to be a constitutional amendment, though, to allow communities to
decide? Yes, it is. It's structured as that.
Yeah.
Transportation is another issue that's come up in the legislature. We talked about it last month. Apparently billions of dollars proposed to build tunnels underneath Atlanta.
Here, I'll really go out on a limb and say I predict this won't be resolved. Does anybody else have any thoughts on...
Go ahead.
Any thoughts on tunnels under the downtown connector? Yeah, like how ridiculous is that?
Like a 26-mile-long tunnel.
Yeah,
I'm amazed that that's even a subject for consideration after
the
big dig.
The other end, you're in Gibraltar.
It sounds like something from The Onion. It really does.
I mean, weren't people like watching what happened in Boston where that like. Billions of dollar boondoggle, and suddenly tiles start falling off and killing people. And we're going to build something that's 26 miles long.
But meanwhile, the brain drain is bad for local business development? What is it, the guy down in who sits on the route and he thinks it's a terrible idea? Is it also Johnson?
No. I can't remember his name. But no, it's not Eric Johnson.
The one that's been defending himself rather wildly on Peach Pundit.
We'll put it on the show. We'll put it in the show notes.
Steve Davis.
There you go.
Thank you, Steve Davis.
Yeah.
Finally, one of the other issues is a hot button issue this session so far was I think it's dead now, but a bill to have all girls vaccinated for HPV, and there was a lot of heat about this and whether or not it was just a. Something that it was kind of being pushed by drug company lobbies. So anyone have thoughts, pro or con?
I'll step out on this one as well. About 30,000 men a year in the United States die from prostate cancer. It is a easily detectable disease, can be cured, and it's basically a digital rectal exam and a PSA test, a prostate-specific antigen test. There's also, in the United States, for the last 10 years, approximately 35,000 to 40,000 people a year die from the flu. Also, easily preventable if everybody gets a flu shot. From the HPV, which causes cancer, last year about 3,700 women died, 10% of 5% of the two previous diseases that I mentioned. And for that, they were going to have every schoolgirl of grade 6, I believe it was, age up, vaccinated with a almost $400 vaccine, of which we don't know, by the way, the long-term impact of. If the legislature is really concerned with saving lives, they would require a flu vaccination, a PSA test, and a digital rectal exam. First,
we're not going to require digital rectal exams in this
life. Exactly. But first, before they would get to the HPV, I think really what we saw was, and if you think about the TV ads that were running for this particular vaccine during this time, what you saw was a very sophisticated marketing, advertising, and public relations campaign implemented by a drug company that was pushing a vaccine that will very soon have competition on the market, which of course will cut into prices. That'll probably happen at the end of March. And their campaign was to use legislatures to raise the issue. And you'll notice in both of the legislatures that got prominent national coverage, both Texas and Georgia, the issue has now been withdrawn. That's because the campaign achieved its purpose. They didn't really want to pass the legislation. They just wanted to use legislatures in order to promote this drug. And I'm going to give our legislature the benefit of the doubt. I think that they were duped into this marketing campaign for this particular drug. But I'm not saying the drug's not good, not effective, that people shouldn't get it. But what you saw really was politicians and elected officials calling for the vaccination, not nearly the movement in the medical community, which is where you should have heard it coming from. So that tells you this was really a spin campaign.
It's an interesting idea, because when it all came about, I was very puzzled by where this was coming from, because I sort of crystal ball gazed the reaction, and it was what I expected, which was just outrage from all over the place and all over the political spectrum. And the question of why this was brought up and why Senator Balfour brought it up. And there's a lot of, actually, the funny thing is this has been a quiet session. There's a lot of things going on where the reporters down at the AJC are not earning their pay, because one of the five W's is why. And they are not asking these legislators, why are you doing some of these squirrely things? Eric Johnson's another good example, but I'll save that for another day.
Well, suffice to say, it's dead. The campaign achieved its purpose. It's marketing drugs.
I think they would have been in the news anyway. I mean, I heard about, before I even heard about a push for mandating vaccines or whatever, the big news was that they had gotten, you know, maybe they should look to the right-wing Christian groups that spoke out immediately and gave them all the press they could have needed.
Well, that's what made this so weird was Balfour. You know, he's not a dope smoking hippie.
Right.
He's got an R by his name, and as a pretty conservative guy, and he's going to come out and float out a bill that's going, the evangelicals are going to like storm the castle. It was the weirdest thing ever.
I thought it was weird where it came from.
I did too. I thought it was crazy. And that's why I immediately figured it had something to do with the pharmaceutical companies. You know, and again, Georgia. It's always Georgia and Texas with this, you know.
Well, at least in this case, the almighty dollar won out. Yeah.
Well, it looks like we've got at least another month and probably more of discussing the Georgia legislature. So it's time to wrap things up right now, and we'll go around with final thoughts. And then I'll come back and wrap things up finally. So, Garrett.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the 30-day mark for the legislature for the session is going to be this coming up this week. So anything that actually goes before passes through committee has to be done this week. And so hopefully the stuff we're talking about after that is going to be the real final issues that they're going to be debating and discussing. So that'll be interesting.
Legislative sessions tend to tie up fairly neatly at the end when the leadership decides that, you know, they're going to pick their top five or six issues that everybody can be proud of. This session will be no different. They'll come up with a half dozen good issues that everyone can look at and feel some pride in, but it's clearly not going to be a landmark legislative session.
I just really wanted to take the opportunity to thank Amber and all the people who organized PodCamp and how nice it was to be able to do this here. And
you're here.
Absolutely. Really appreciate
it. I'm personally looking forward to being able to help pay my income taxes that I owe in a few weeks. Someday I'll be able to pay that with a payday loan and not have to drive all the way to South Carolina to get one, because that burns up half the payday loan in gas. So, you know, I thank the legislature for giving me the opportunity to remain in month-to-month debt locally.
Well, as the legislature continues to drag on and on and on, I keep having this image flash in my mind, and I can't remember if it was from the 40s or 50s, but there was a session one time where Denmark Gruber literally climbed over the railing of the balcony and to stop the clock, because if it reached midnight, they had to leave, and something was going on, and it's just this brilliant image of like this just old Southern gentleman like hanging over the rail, stopping the clock in his three-piece suit. So it's time for them to get out of town.
I can say that again. I want to thank all the panelists for being here. I want to thank Rusty and Amber, as always. And I want to thank PodCamp for hosting this session. Hope that you enjoyed listening. We'll be back next month. This is the Georgia Politics Podcast.